Welcome back to the Hemingway List podcast, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I'm 89.7% asleep, so I'm going to struggle here to talk about Anagrenana, part 5, chapter 14 of Agrabah Synecdoche. What was your favourite part of this chapter? Chapter is Kitty's I can't even talk. My brain's asleep. Is Kitty's jealousy too much? Was it a red flag or just newlywed jitters? That's me slapping myself in the face. Wake up. Oh, that hurt my brain. Why did I do that? Thermos of Beer said, for question 2, is it Kitty's jealousy too much, or is it a red flag, or just newlywed jitters? I think it's probably the result of Levin having Kitty read his journal. Yeah, that was a bad move by Levin, the old journal share. You should never keep a list, Levin. A wise man once told me that. I still think that was a huge mistake. He's planted all sorts of seeds of doubt in her. If she hadn't read the journal, I don't think being late would have been an issue. But now, she can only imagine all the things he's probably doing. Because Levin himself felt that it was a good idea to let her know about all the things he's done. It was a stupid move that cost him her trust. Well, I mean, he's a man. He's a human, right? He does sex things. Surprise, Kitty. He's a fully mature man. He's supposed to be sexually active. He's bloody 29 or 37 or however old he is. It was a dumb thing for him to keep a list, keep a journal, and even dumber to share that. But, I mean, what was he, half an hour late? She can't be that jealous, you know? Half an hour is just inconsequential. That's just, I had to stop for petrol. Not that they had cars or petrol back then, but you know what I mean. I am Norwegian, and my horse had a sore tail, and we had to stop and fix it. Thank you for the nice words, Anders, says I am Norwegian. All good. Thank you for being nice enough to warrant nice words being said. What am I on about? My favourite part of this chapter was Levin getting pulled into that everyday struggle. I'm guilty myself of thinking that I'd be able to solve those inane conflicts easily, or avoid them altogether, but like Levin, I would be in for a rough wake-up call. Their relationship is not the happy, frolicking kind that I had imagined earlier in the book. I think her jealousy was mostly jitters, and that anger that builds and builds when you're forced to wait for someone. Yeah, we all know that anger that builds and builds when you're forced to wait for someone. But half an hour? You know, half an hour. I can't remember, was he late for an appointment? Like, were they all meant to meet somewhere? Or was he just half an hour late coming home? Because if they were meant to meet somewhere and he was half an hour late for the meeting, then yeah, like that would warrant the stress and the jitters and the jealousy. But if you just came home half an hour late, then, I mean, come on. But I can't remember the details. Astrologer Plus said, I feel like Kitty... Excuse me. I feel like Kitty is very naive and has a kind nature. Her jealousy stems from her own fantasies more than anything Levin could have done. They're quite the safe couple, I feel, in that both are not too worldly and seem like they're going to work out. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Levin seems like the kind of guy who'll work things out, doesn't he? He's not too flighty. He's not too skittish. He's no Vronsky. Vronsky, I don't trust that guy. I don't trust that Vronsky fella. Alright. That was all the conversation we had about chapter blah dipa digga digga. That chapter. So let's continue on to the next chapter that precedes that. Proceeds. Chapter 15. They had just returned from Moscow and were glad of the solitude. He was in his study and sat at the table writing, she in the dark lilac dress she had worn during the first days of her marriage, and which was specially memorable and dear to him, sat with her embroidery on that same old leather-covered sofa which had stood in the study through his father's and grandfather's times. As he sat thinking and writing, he was all the while blissfully conscious of her presence. He had not abandoned his work on the estate, or on the book in which the foundations of a new farming system were to be explained, but as those thoughts and that work formerly appeared to him trivial and insignificant in comparison with the gloom that overshadowed all existence, so now they appeared trivial and insignificant in comparison with his future prospects, all bathed in the bright sunshine of happiness. He went on with his work with a feeling that the centre of gravity of his attention had shifted, and that he consequently saw the matter differently and with greater clearness, for merely this work had been his salvation from life. He used to feel that without it life would be too dismal, and now he needed it in order that his life should not be too monotonously bright. Having set to work again on his manuscript and read over what he had written, he was glad to find that the work seemed worth doing. Many of his former thoughts now appeared superfluous and extreme, but many omissions became clear to him when he went over the matter afresh. He was writing a fresh chapter on why agriculture was not profitable in Russia. He argued that Russia's poverty was caused not only by a wrong distribution of landed property and a false policy, but that of late years those evils had been fostered by a foreign civilization, artificially grafted upon Russia, especially as to ways of communication, viz. The railways, which had conducted to a centralization in the cities, which had conduced to a centralization in the cities, a growth of luxury, and consequently to a development of factories at the expense of agriculture, and attendant upon this to credit operations and speculation. It seemed to him that when the growth of a nation's wealth is normal, these things follow only after a considerable amount of labor has been devoted to agriculture, and after the latter has been placed in its rightful, or at any rate in a definite position. That a nation's wealth ought to grow proportionately at the same rate in all its branches, and especially in such a way that the other branches should not outdistance agriculture. That means of communication should conform to the agricultural conditions, and that with our wrong methods of using the land, the railways, brought about not by economic but by political necessity, had come prematurely, and instead of promoting agriculture, as had been expected, had interfered with it and hindered it by stimulating the development of manufacturers and credit. Therefore, as the one-sided and premature development of a single organ in an animal would injure its general development, so credit, railways, and the forced growth of manufacturers, though undoubtedly necessary in Europe, where the time was ripe for them, had in Russia only harmed the general development of wealth by thrusting aside the most important current questions, namely the organization of agriculture. While he was writing his thoughts, she was thinking about his unnatural attention to young Prince Charsky, who had been very tactlessly paying court to her on the day before their departure from Moscow. "Why, he's jealous," she thought. "Oh dear, how sweet and silly he is, jealous of me. If he only knew that all the rest of them are no more than Peter the cook to me." And she glanced with a feeling of proprietorship, strange to herself, at the nape of his red neck. "Though it's a pity to interrupt him at his work, but he'll have time enough. I must see his face. Will he feel that I am looking at him? I want him to turn. I want it. Well," and she opened her eyes wider, trying thereby to increase the force of her look. "Yes, they divert all the sap. They produce a false glamour," he muttered, pausing and feeling that she was looking at him. He turned round, smiling. "Well," he asked with a smile, and rose. He has turned, she thought. Nothing, I only wanted to make you turn around, said she, gazing at him and trying to discover whether he was vexed at the interruption. I say, how delightful it is for us to be alone together. For me, I mean, he said, coming toward her with a beaming smile of happiness. It is delightful for me, too. I shan't go anywhere, especially not to Moscow. And what were you thinking about? I was thinking... No, no, go and write. Don't let me distract you, she said, puckering her lips. And I must cut out these little holes, you see. Taking up her scissors, she began cutting. Come, tell me what it was, he said, sitting down beside her and watching the circular movement of her tiny scissors. Oh, what was I thinking about? About Moscow and about the nape of your neck. Why should such happiness come just to me? It's not natural, it's too beautiful, he said, kissing her hand. To me, the more beautiful it is, the more natural it seems. Your hair comes to a point behind, he said, carefully turning her head round. A point, yes, so it does, there, but enough. We are engaged on serious matters. But their serious matters did not get on, and they jumped apart guiltily when Kuzma came to say that tea was served. And have they returned from town? Levin inquired of Kuzma. They've just come and are unpacking. Be quick and come, she said, as she left the study. Or else I shall read all the letters without you, and after that let's have a duet. Left alone, having put away his papers in the new portfolio she had bought, he washed his hands at the new washstand with the new and elegant utensils that had also appeared through her agency. He smiled at his thought and shook his head disapprovingly at it. A feeling resembled repentance tormenting him. There was something contemptible, effeminate, Capuan, as he called it, in his present life. It is not right to live so, he thought. Soon it will be 3 months since I did anything worth mentioning. This is almost the first day that I have really set to work seriously. And what has come of it? Scarcely had I begun when I stopped. Even my usual duties, all almost abandoned. The farm work, why, I hardly even go and see about that. Sometimes I am sorry to part from her. Sometimes I can see she is dull. And I used to think that up to the time of my marriage, life would go on just so, anyhow, and not count for much. But that, after marriage, real life was going to begin. And now that is nearly 3 months ago, and I have never spent my days more idly or uselessly. No, this can't go on. I must make a beginning. Of course, it is not her fault. There is nothing to reproach her with. I ought to have been firmer and upheld my independence as a man. This way I shall get into bad habits and teach them to her, too. Of course, it is not her fault, he said to himself. But it is difficult for a dissatisfied man not to reproach someone else, namely the person most closely connected with the subject of his dissatisfaction. And Levin dimly felt that, though she was not herself in fault, she never could be in fault. It was the fault of her bringing up, which was too superficial and frivolous. That fool, Charsky, I know she wanted to stop him, but did not know how, he thought. Yes, except for the interest she takes in the housekeeping, that interest she certainly has, her clothes and her embroidery, she has no real interests. She takes no interest in our work, in the farm, in the peasants, or in music, though she is quite good at that, or in books. She does nothing and is quite content. In his heart he blamed her, but he did not understand that she was preparing herself for a period of activity which was inevitably coming, when at one and the same time she would be her husband's wife, the mistress of the house, and a bearer, nurturer, and educator for her children. He did not understand that, but she knew it instinctively, and while getting ready for her gigantic task, she did not reproach herself for the moments of careless and happy love that she now enjoyed while building her nest for the future. All right, Kitty's building a nest for Levin. How sweet. Have your say about this chapter over on the subreddit. Sorry about my voice. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.